Welcome to the Hot Law Podcast, where we discuss the hot topics in today's news from the legal perspective. This podcast is brought to you by the Beaulieu Law Firm PC. This podcast is not legal advice and is strictly for educational and entertainment purposes. For legal advice, visit the contact page at www.beaulieulawfirm.com.
And yes, welcome to the Hot Law Podcast, episode six. So glad you could join us today on this very, very hot topic. I know it's been a long time since I've done an episode. It's been a busy summer. You know, a lawyer's job is very, very tough, but I'm glad to really share some really good news with you today. I am joined with a permanent co-host. I'm so happy. You know, one of my most popular episodes is what I did with her with the Music Modernization Act. I believe we do have great chemistry. She's a fantastic attorney, a friend and a mentor of mine. So, everybody, I'd love to introduce you to Melissa Bernier.
Hey. What's up, everybody?
Awesome. So, thank you for joining me. You know, there's a lot to talk about. We're probably going to do a more thorough introduction of Melissa, probably in a video we'll catch on Instagram. But we got to jump into this story because there's a lot to talk about. So, Melissa, you know, what are we talking about today?
So, today we're talking about the hot button topic of the Jay-Z and NFL deal. You know, that's been on everyone's lips for like the last week and a half. Mm-hmm. And we're definitely here to break it down, let you know what the deal is legally, socially, all that stuff. So mm-hmm. I'm excited to get into it and talk about it.
Absolutely. So, you know, with all these with the NFL joining Jay-Z and Roc Nation joining the NFL, we all know that the central figurehead is Colin Kaepernick, former quarterback for the 49ers. And it's brought a lot of attention to his case. Now, the last time I was on was in February. I didn't get a chance to talk about how he settled his grievance with the NFL. And there seems to be, you know, with people talking about, hey, if it's cool for Colin Kaepernick to take the money, then Jay-Z could take the money. But those scenarios could not be any more different.
Yeah, it's like comparing apples and steak. Yeah. like two completely different things.
Right. So let's just jump into it right here. And we're going to talk about why Colin Kaepernick settled. So as we know, rewind last year. A year ago, I debuted my show talking about the NFL versus the NFLPA, in which that subject was about the anthem protests. Now, eventually, the NFL retracted and didn't really address that and didn't really enforce that rule. But this has been an ongoing thing since 2016 when Colin Kaepernick first took his knee. Now, he filed a grievance, and there was no findings that came about when it was announced that the settlement occurred in February of this year, I believe. But the issue was collusion and whether the NFL and the other owners conspired to keep Colin Kaepernick out the league. But let's talk briefly about why Colin Kaepernick couldn't take the NFL directly in court. Now, there's something called the Collective Bargaining Agreement, or the CBA for short. The CBA for all sports leagues is the lifeblood. It is how it dictates how both the league and the players will operate together. It details out all the rules. It's very comprehensive. Trades, pay, rookie scales. If a player gets hurt, what happens? So, and because of the way the leagues are built, and you know, like there's just certain restrictions of trade. For example, anybody could be traded at any time. There's a restriction of how much a rookie can earn. All these players have to collectively bargain for that, and it really helps the competitiveness of the league. So, now also in the CBA, anytime there's a grievance or there's a dispute, it is required that this goes through arbitration. Now, generally, arbitration is sort of a informal, smaller scale trial with just one arbitrator. And you want to go into a little bit about what arbitration means for the audience and why it's more beneficial to go through arbitration and why maybe it's beneficial to go straight to court?
Yeah, definitely. Mm-hmm. So arbitration is like the flip side of the coin to litigation. Mm-hmm. It's a lot more private. When you go to litigation and you go to trial, a lot of that is of public knowledge. They're publicly recorded documents and things like that. But arbitration is like almost like a secret meeting, and you have an arbitrator who presides over the dispute. and then renders a decision in favor of one person or another. So a lot of times in collective bargaining agreements, in other corporate sort of agreements, you'll have a clause that states that before you can go to litigation, like in the courts, and, you know, go to trial, mm-hmm. you either have to go through arbitration, or arbitration is really your only recourse if there's a dispute. So in this particular instance, under the NFL's collective bargaining agreement, players have to go through arbitration before that they can go to litigation and trial.
Absolutely. So in other words, if Cap would have tried to sue the NFL in court, they would have sent them back to arbitration. It's like, no, you already have a process, because the courts generally prefer if the parties can resolve their disputes without involving the courts, you know, save money and time mm-hmm. and save the resources of the courts. And, you know, with those alternative dispute resolutions, right? You know, so
exactly.
That's one of them. So, and also if they were, and generally arbitration rulings are binding. If there's something really kind of iffy about how the arbitration went down, you know, you can appeal to the courts, but the courts generally gives great deference to the arbitration. So unless something is very out of nowhere and very, you know, irregular, then maybe they'll take it on in terms of method, how you do things, or maybe the arbitrator did not have good reasoning at all.
Exactly.
Right. So let's recap of the case a little bit. You know, Colin Kaepernick, you know, he was a quarterback for the 49ers. And he was more of a middle of the pack. Now, he wasn't as great as he was, say, about 2012 or 13 when he took the 49ers to the Super Bowl. But he struggled some, but he was still a middle of the pack quarterback, better than some. And there's a lot of, you know, Stephen A. Smith would say it all the time on First Take, there's a lot of scrubs in the NFL, a lot of scrub quarterbacks. And there's a lot of teams that need a decent quarterback. And Colin Kaepernick, by all means, is more than a decent quarterback. Yet, they don't really want to help him at all and or really hire him. And, you know, but Colin Kaepernick took a risk in terms of, while he was protesting, he felt that he had value in terms of his play. So he decided to opt out of his deal in hopes to get a new deal, more lucrative deal. But I think he may have underestimated the kind of impact his movement would have on the owners. And so he's, in effect, without a team for an extended period of time. Now, the grievance is because of collusion, and he feels that he's being locked out of the league. And if you could explain a little bit about, you know, how does the NFL CBA handle collusion?
So the anti-collusion clause of the collective bargaining agreement is actually Article 17 of the CBA. Mm-hmm. And basically it says, and it requires cooperation or agreement between at least two teams or between at least one team in the league to deprive Kaepernick of the chance to play. A team cannot collude with itself. So essentially, it's like cliquish. So it's like two people are like, you know what? We don't want him playing with us. Mm-hmm. And that could amount to collusion under the CBA, provided that Kaepernick can provide, you know, the requisite evidence to mm-hmm. prove that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, for sure. And, you know, there's just, you know, for me, in my opinion, you know, when I think about this, do I think that Colin Kaepernick is being actively colluded against? It's kind of like a yes and no for me, because when people talk about Colin Kaepernick, Colin Kaepernick should play in the NFL. Well, he should, but the NFL needs to hire him. I think if all 30 teams could hire Colin Kaepernick, they would, but it would be one team that hires Colin Kaepernick. Mm-hmm. And it will be one team alone that has to deal with the burden of the PR of having Colin Kaepernick on his team. Mm-hmm. So it'll be one team that might lose all the ticket sales. It'll be one team that has protests around their games. So I think it was an issue of not so much everybody saying, hey, nobody gets Colin Kaepernick. It was more everybody looking at each other and saying, not it.
Yeah, you know? I would definitely have to agree with that. Yeah. Because the whole point of collusion is that we all come together and sort of conspire to say, hey, we're mm-hmm. all not going to do this. Like, mm-hmm. it's an across the board kind of thing.
Right.
Whereas I think your point is very valid, that I think each individual team was like, listen, the PR surrounding this, the backlash surrounding this, it's a lot. And yeah. we might take an economic hit. So,
yeah.
again, I like your whole yeah. analogy. Like, not it. Like, I really don't want to handle that. So
yeah.
I get that.
That doesn't have to say there, right? I think they're stars. I think they should be tanking it on and understand that what's happening to Colin Kaepernick is wrong. But I don't think this is a PR nightmare for them, you know, but I think they would rather suffer this PR nightmare collectively than for one team to suffer it alone.
Got it.
You know, yeah. I just think that's where it is more so than anything else. But I'm sure there's been, like I stated here, there's been the New York Times has reported leaked recordings between meetings between the NFL players and the league officials, and I think there was expressed notion that they were worried about President Trump criticizing the players and the owners about how they're handling the protests. As you know, I think as I discussed with my client last year about the NFL, different differences between the NFL and the NBA. You know, the NFL, their audience are very more conservative. Mm-hmm. You know, it's mm-hmm. more conservative crowd, conservative audience, and very conservative ownership group, and I think they probably view things a different way because they always seem to drop the ball. However, I do think that they were really scared of handling this PR nightmare. But again, I think they were cowards. But anyway, to move on, now one of the interesting things about this was that the NFL looked for a summary judgment, which means that, you know, on the initial information and the pleadings and the papers that the NFL stated, like, see, from what we told you up front, you can clearly see that there's no issue. We weren't trying to collude at all. So mm-hmm. you should dismiss this without even diving into in the trial format of the case or diving into discovery or going further. Mm-hmm. But the arbitrator was like, I'm going to decline your request for summary judgment. I think there is an issue of fact. You may be colluding. So we really are going to have to dig through this because it seems that there's actual controversy. And that is pretty much a significant win for Colin Kaepernick.
It really is. Him yeah. and Mark Garagos was his attorney,
yes,
right?
The famous, infamous
Mark Garagos.
Absolutely. And
speaking in terms of summary judgment, like mm-hmm. a motion, so just to clarify for our audience, a motion for summary judgment is like the golden nugget. It's basically saying, like, based on all the evidence that we've presented, we should win. And mm-hmm. it can go into the merits of the case, or sometimes it can't. Mm-hmm. It could just be sort of a superficial thing. But mm-hmm. to either win a motion for summary judgment is a huge thing. Mm-hmm. And having the NFL's motion for summary judgment essentially denied is huge for Kaepernick, because that in itself basically states that there might be an issue of collusion, which is huge.
Which is huge.
Yeah.
Which is a very, very big deal. The fact that I had to go through this really speaks to the fact as to why, you know, why they came to a settlement. Now, mm-hmm. people want to talk about that, cap settled, but it was really both parties that had to settle, because both parties really had to, really had a great reason to settle. It would have saved everybody's butt. Mm-hmm. But now let's talk about settlement, because sometimes people think settlement is like taking a loss or be like, okay, yeah, you're yeah. right, so let's just settle this and, you know, just be on our way. Mm-hmm. So Melissa, please explain for the audience, like, what exactly is a legal settlement?
So yes, like you aptly just stated, a lot of people, you know, assign a negative connotation to settlement. I mean, think of it in colloquial terms. It's like if you're in a relationship with someone that you know you're not supposed to be in and you're settling, you know you're usually getting less.
Well, yeah, that's right.
You know that you're usually getting less than what you think that you should or that mm-hmm. you think you deserve. Mm-hmm. But in legal terms, that's not it at all. Mm-hmm. So to take a step back and give people sort of a broader picture of it. So obviously you have judges, you have the whole legal system, but in totality, the percentage of cases that actually make it to trial, I believe, is less than 10%.
Correct.
So most of the cases that people are adjudicating in court never make it to trial. So the overwhelming majority of cases settle.
That's right.
And settling is not a bad thing. It's not like somebody loses. It's a lot of times it's more like, okay, let's come to a compromise mm-hmm. and see how we can work this out without having to go to trial and have someone decide on our behalf what this means. Especially when you're talking about contracts, the judge will only know what's in the contract based on the evidence that you present. They weren't there when you signed the contract. They weren't there in the negotiations. They have no idea what really happened and what the spirit and intent of the contract was. And so judges, honestly, they don't like to do a lot of work. They really don't really don't want to decide on something that they really don't know much about. Mm-hmm. I mean, no disrespect to my judges, you mm-hmm. know, they're necessary, but they really don't want to do that. And so a lot of judges sort of guide litigants and people who are in disputes to settle. Basically, decide on your own what makes sense for both of you. And a lot of times, it's not just about the issues. It's also about outside influences and outside circumstances that may make settling a lot more attractive than going to court. And one of those outside influences is always cost.
Absolutely.
Litigation and going to trial is a lot of money. Don't get it twisted. You can spend upwards of hundreds of thousands of dollars litigating a case that may be worth maybe $50,000.
And as an attorney, rightfully so. All right, because let me tell you, yes. Melissa and I talk about these war stories about litigation. You know, it is a very, very serious option to take in order to resolve a matter. You're going to be, there's a lot of, when we draft these complaints and motions, you know, they must be crafted very carefully. They're scrutinized. The client's reputation is on the line. We have to make sure the facts is correct because this is public information. And we have to make sure that everything is legally copacetic. There's the issue of law. There's the fact. We got to apply the facts. There's theories. You have to dispute their side. We have to think about what the other side might come up with and dispute that. So it's a lot to take into. So that's why sometimes we offer, like, maybe you want to settle, because we want to think about your pockets as well. We want to think about, the ramifications of it going public because this is public record and you want to keep your reputation intact. So those are one of the reasons about settling we're going to dive into. So I'll start off by talking about why the NFL would settle. So this is I follow a gentleman named Michael McCann. He is a brilliant sports legal mind. He writes for Sports Illustrated. He actually spent some time at my law school, Vermont Law School, for the Sports and Entertainment Legal Society, and he led it there. If you're interested in any kind of sports league related matters, follow Michael McCann on Facebook or on Twitter and on Sports Illustrated. He has really great information. He's a great resource for me for my sports legal stuff. So this is a little bit taken from his articles and really well explained on why both of these parties wanted to settle. So one of the first ones is that the league may have realized that after losing to Kaepernick on summary judgment, that it could really lose the entire grievance. Because like you stated, Melissa, the judge really saw them. It smells a little bit like collusion. I'm not going to make that conclusion, but there's enough there for us to really dive deeper into what's going on.
Mm-hmm. And just to jump in real quick, mm-hmm. An arbitrator or a judge, it's all or nothing. When you get in front of an arbitrator or a judge, there's no, okay, maybe let's give this side a little bit, let's give the other side a little bit. It's all or nothing. Mm-hmm. So the fact that the NFL lost on summary judgment means exactly that they could lose the entire grievance and they would get nothing.
Absolutely.
And fined. Yeah.
For sure. Mm-hmm. And secondly, if the NFL would have lost on the merits to Cap, it would be a public relations disaster. They would have said, like, wow, you guys really went out there to collude, and it would have probably opened up even more investigations. It probably would have opened up Pandora's box of all kinds of stuff, because we already know sometimes people with big money, they're into a lot of shady stuff. So you're just really giving people a reason to dive in as to how exactly you do business. And third, that the finding would have been very bad for player relations. When you sign the CBA, there is a trust that the NFL is going to do their job and the player associations is going to do their job. And for all 32 NFL teams to collude against players really is a breach of duty in the contract. And it could cause the league, give the right of the players union to actually break the contract and be like, or terminate the contract based on what you guys are doing. And may cause for you guys to renegotiate and make things more in favor of the NFL, and they could take it to court. And it just leaves you, the NFL, open to being attacked if they went public with this. And if they did not go towards a settlement, because going through a settlement, what most likely will happen is one of the main conditions for settlement is they make a payment to you and you have to sign a non-disclosure agreement that you won't say anything at all for life. And if either side would say anything and reveal these confidential information, it would be a breach of that confidentiality contract and could sue for any specific financial damages. And so that's pretty much, you know, why the NFL would want to settle. So listen, why don't you tackle maybe why Kaepernick would want to settle for himself?
Yeah, definitely. So despite the fact that the NFL lost on summary judgment, that doesn't necessarily mean that it's a slam dunk case for Kaepernick. Because like we said, he would have had to prove that there was collusion. And like I stated before, collusion is like we're all in agreement that we're going to basically blackball him from, you know, playing. And to prove that is a pretty high burden. And in this particular case, the burden of proof for Kaepernick is a clear preponderance of the evidence. And what that means in layman's terms is that you're basically, you can prove, you know, by the evidence that you show that you're about 90 to 95% sure that everyone, and that's all, you know, all teams in the league colluded against basically hiring Kaepernick. So while the NFL sort of lost on, you know, the first rung of the ladder, to have Kaepernick succeed in proving that there was actual collusion, it's a high burden. And he might not be able to prove that because essentially you're having to show evidence of what's not there. You have to prove that these people decided not to hire you. And that can be hard evidence to sort of gather. So rather than have to jump over that hurdle and prove that sort of evidence, it made more sense for Kaepernick to settle. And additionally, it's just he would have had, you know, going through this whole process, he obviously had, you know, critics and naysayers from day one, but going through the process would sort of multiply those critics, multiply those naysayers. And, you know, he's got endorsements. I mean, look at Nike.
Oh, for sure.
You know, and he's got to think about that. A lot of times what most people don't realize is that when you're going through litigation or you're going through a legal dispute, it's more than just the issues that are being fought in court. It's balancing a lot of different things. I mean, for Kaepernick, that's balancing his livelihood.
Absolutely.
Getting paid, playing, getting paid, endorsements and things like that. Those are sort of the considerations he had to take. He had to take into consideration when he was deciding whether to settle or whether to take it all the way. And as we see, he settled, and that's not a bad thing.
No, it's not a bad thing at all. I mean, I am very interested to see what the terms are, but that is not something that
we'll never get to know.
And you know, that's a shame, because I do believe that Kaepernick is getting a raw deal. This is a guy who should be playing, but I think Cap has to also understand, while it's not right, I think in the long run, you know, he'll play an important role in civil rights, you know, in the civil rights movement in the modern day. Mm-hmm. You know, he took a stand. He's on modern day Muhammad Ali, and you know, I wish he was as talented or had the gravitas of Tom Brady or Aaron Rodgers. You know, a guy who could not take off the field. You know, a guy who will help you win. But him knowing that he wasn't that guy, well, he probably believed he was that guy. I don't think he knows. You know, as a player in the NFL, I think you are a little bit cocky. You think you're the best thing in the world. So you need that kind of confidence. But I think there's some kind of understanding, knowing that, you know, he was a backup quarterback at times. And for him to still take that knee and knowing that he was heading into a contract year, I think that's very brave and very admirable of him. And, you know, my hat's off to him still. And I don't know if he'll ever play in the NFL. I don't.
That's a sad reality of this whole situation.
And he's 31 years old. He's still very young. You know, you have Tom Brady's 41 still playing. And, you know, it's a shame. It's a shame. It's a shame.
It is. But it's also important to note that with settlements, a settlement doesn't it doesn't mean that there's a resolution on the merits. So it doesn't assign guilt or blame to anyone.
That's right.
It just says that, hey, these were the issues, and we decided to settle them in this sort of way. Mm-hmm. I mean, unless the terms of the settlement require you to admit guilt, although if you're a good attorney, you would never have your client admit guilt in a settlement.
No.
But it doesn't mean that Kaepernick is wrong. It doesn't mean that the NFL is wrong. It just says, listen, these are the issues. We're all trying to get out with what we can. We don't want to, you know, weather a PR storm or anything like that. So why don't we just pay you? You go your way. We go ours. And everything's good to go.
Absolutely. So now that we talked about, you know, the settlement, you know, and how it's more of a legal process and why, you know, to a certain extent, Colin Kaepernick, you know, had to make a difficult choice. I don't want to say didn't have a choice, but it's a difficult choice for him because, as you said, you know, going up against the NFL would be a quite legal expense. And I don't know if anybody, or I haven't heard anybody that's ready to foot the bill for his legal expense. This is something coming out of Colin Kaepernick's pocket. Mm-hmm. This was already an expensive ordeal. And a lot of the settlement money that he got, I think was about $10 million or so, lot of it went to his attorneys, you know, to his attorney's fees.
Rightly so,
exactly. So how much was he left with? I mean, you know, and there's quite a possibility that he spends all this money and not win. And the NFL would have said to Colin Kaepernick, you're responsible for our legal fees since you brought this suit.
Yeah.
You want to pay the NFL's legal fees? I don't think so. Got an army of lawyers you have to pay. Mm-hmm. So, so now we understand what a settlement is and the kind of deal that Colin Kaepernick took. Let's talk about the deal that Jay-Z and Roc Nation took from the NFL. Now this, I have to say, is one of the most fascinating stories I've heard in a long time, simply because this thing had leg for days. I think the most recent thing is how Jermaine Dupri was told not to take this deal and all this stuff. Cardi B had an opinion. Everybody's had an opinion. It sparked a lot of emotions. There's even a hip-hop artist, I can't remember his name, who even took shots at Colin Kaepernick. So I'm supporting Jay-Z. Jay's supposed to take this money. So it's very emotional for a lot of people. You had people like Jemele Hill, Stephen A. Smith, LZ Grandison of the LA Times, who I'll speak about a little bit lately, and even my client, J. Wayman Henry, that discussed, you know, their opinions on the deal. So I'm going to read a statement from the NFL on the Roc Nation partnership. And it says here, you know, Roc Nation, entertainment company founded by Jay-Z, is entering into a multi-year partnership with the NFL to enhance the NFL's live game experiences and to amplify the league's social justice efforts. As part of the agreement, Roc Nation will advise on a selection of artists for the NFL, like performances like the Super Bowl. A major component of the partnership will be to nurture and strengthen community through football and music, including the NFL's Inspire Change initiative. So I'll talk about my reaction at first when I first heard about this deal. You know, you wake up one morning, you go on Twitter or Instagram, and you see, Twitter on Instagram, and you see Jay-Z in the NFL. I'm like, what? What? Mm-hmm. Wait, what happened? So he was the first one to cross the line, I said no to the Super Bowl, you know.
Yeah, he was very
I don't need you.
Adamant about that. Like, he's, like they were peasants to him, essentially.
Yeah, exactly. So, but I also saw, I think this was, and we read the details, you know, Robert Kraft, really, of the owner of the New England Patriots, curated this relationship between Jay-Z and the NFL. You know, Jay-Z and Roger Goodell have had 5 or 6 discussions within the past year to come to this. And, you know, I think the NFL knows that the NFL has dipped in ratings. There's a lot of people who have boycotted football. Mm-hmm. I think their ratings have to do a lot of something else. I think just the violence in football and President Trump is all over TV. So, you know, people are watching CNN more so than football because that's entertainment within itself. they are suffering, you know, and having difficulty connecting. So I decided to reach out to a very influential African-American, as in Jay-Z, and possibly help out with, their ratings, I think. I think it's more economical because a lot of artists were saying no. Yeah. A lot of artists were saying, I'm not performing. Rihanna said no.
Cardi B said no.
Cardi B said no. So. Mm-hmm. And I think that they brought in somebody like Jay-Z to convince the fellow artists. But when I first heard of this, I'm like, so we doing Super Bowl halftime shows? Then I read on. I saw the social justice leg of it, which pleased me some. So I was just like, okay, well, I guess Jay-Z's going to make a dollar at the same time while making a movement. So I have more of a wait-and-see approach. But what are your thoughts, Melissa? What do you think about all this?
At first glance, it can kind of seem like a slap in the face to Kaepernick. Like you said before, he's no Tom Brady. He's sort of a middle of the road quarterback. So as far as his value professionally, you know, he put a lot on the line for issues that he felt strongly about and that affect a lot of us, you know, in the community. And for Jay-Z to kind of just come in and be like, well, you know, the same people that are sort of oppressing you and are giving you such a hard time about issues that affect all of us, I'm going to just walk in and make a deal with them. And, mm-hmm. you know, it's all about securing my bag. That's kind of the first impression that I got. However, when you really sit and think about it and you really sort of examine it from all perspectives, nothing is done in a vacuum. And there's a lot that we can't see, and there's a lot that, you know, we have to wait and see about. And so the one thing that came to my mind yesterday, I was thinking about this, is that there might be more to his agenda than we are privy to right now.
Mm-hmm.
Because one of the, arguably speaking in general terms, one of the best ways to affect change is to actually be in a position to do so. And being within the NFL, being within the organization. Now, we don't know the exact terms of the partnership. We don't know what sort of leverage he actually has. But as it seems on the surface, he does have some sort of decision-making power and has some sort of say in how things are directed, at least when it comes to Super Bowl halftime shows or whatever.
Yeah.
But also with this social justice initiative that the NFL is taking. So maybe he's going to be working from the inside out. So he might be playing offense as opposed to defense, which might be very good. It might be lucrative. Obviously it's going to be lucrative for him, but he might be able to actually effectuate change, which is a possibility. But at the same time, I think, I don't know what this NFL's social justice initiative would look like. I mean, is it just like doing some random charity work, like passing out book bags or something?
Mm-hmm.
Or is it going to be some low-level kind of thing? Or is mm-hmm. it going to be actually lobbying to Congress to get, you know, reform with respect to, you know, prison sentences and things like that, things that directly affect our community. We don't know what that looks like yet.
Mm-hmm.
So we kind of just have to wait and see. I can see both sides of it, but again, it can go either way.
Absolutely. Yeah, I feel the same way as you. I'm hoping. Now, Jay-Z, I think you've expressed a little earlier that you read the press conference. You watched the press conference. I think one of the biggest quotes he says that kind of really took people back was that someone asked him, and it's a very good question, asked Jay-Z, like, Jay-Z, simply put, would you kneel or stand? And Jay's reaction was like, look, I think we're past kneeling. And I think that specific phrase, I don't know what he meant by that, because in the same breath, he says he believes the protest. Mm-hmm. I think he wants more actionable items. You can't just kneel. You have to do more. Like, what's the next step? However, you know, wording is very important, you know, and, you know.
And his body language, too. He said it very, like, he was really cocky when he said it. And it's almost like saying, in a way, if at first glance, it could seem as though he's just like, well, kneeling is, it's not that important anymore.
Right.
And of course it's important because it's symbolic.
Yes.
And again, you know, Kaepernick, Reed, you know, all of these people who were taking a knee, it's to say, listen, I can't do anything else. I'm not part of the organization.
Exactly.
I'm not part of the decision makers, but I'm doing what I can do right now to let you know that I'm not cool with this shit.
Yes.
I'm not down with this. There's a problem, and I'm going to let you know that there's a problem.
Exactly.
So everyone is sort of doing what they can with where they're at. And so I don't necessarily think that he made it, he wanted it to seem like, oh, it's not important. I feel like he's saying we were at that stage and it obviously hasn't gone anywhere because mm-hmm. Kaepernick is still not playing
mm-hmm.
and nothing has really changed with respect to social justice reform. So now I'm coming in and I'm in the lion's den, essentially, and now I can affect change from the inside. I'm hoping that's what his his agenda is. I hope it's not just, well, this halftime show is going to be off the hook and we're going to get all these artists that said no before. And, you know, yeah, every other third week we'll hand out like book bags or something. Like, I hope it's not that.
To your point, I hope lobbying and using the political connections that these owners have does make some changes. You know, these owners, you know, they make sizable donations to these politicians. So I hope that they would have the ear of these politicians and say, you know, do something for the black folk, essentially, you know, make good reforms, you know, make this a better world. All right. You know, make change, you know. So I hope that's the case. Because I hope that's the case. Because I don't know if Jay-Z has that kind of political influence. Because Jay-Z is a billionaire, but I don't know if he's not multi-billionaire, you know, so.
Yeah, and he's sort of by himself in the lion's den.
Exactly.
I mean, he's with a lot of these owners that have made public statements about supporting Donald Trump and made public statements about, you know, giving money to his campaign and things like that. So it's going to be interesting to see how much pull he actually has. Mm-hmm. And if this is just sort of, I think I read in one article, they said it's like the NFL putting on Hova face, which is horrible.
Ooh.
But you understand the implications of that. Like, right. It's just sort of, hey, this is what we're doing, but it really doesn't do anything at all. Absolutely. And that would be really sad because that would make Jay-Z sort of a puppet and a sellout. So,
yeah. And speaking of those points you made, you know, my client, Jay Wyman Henry, he's a former NFL player. He played for the San Diego Chargers about 6 years, I think sometime in the 90s. He still works with the NFL in terms of their properties. He does a lot of stuff with the Super Bowl. And he's friends with a lot of former players and current players. You know, one of his best friends is Ray Lewis, formerly of the Baltimore Ravens, you know, legend. So I'm going to play a clip of Jay Wyman Henry speaking about Jay-Z. And the question is Jay-Z wrong for joining the NFL? So take a listen. Right, Hot Law Podcast here with Jay Wyman Henry. All right, Jay, let me ask you a question. Do you think Jay-Z is wrong for partnering with the NFL?
I don't believe that he was wrong if there's true context of what his purpose is. And so if his real purpose is to make change based off of what has transpired, then he can use his platform to make a significant change. And I believe that he could. However, what he has displayed thus far has only shown his commitment to produce and have a better halftime show, his commitment of saying that he was going to actually use this platform to make people more aware, in which we have no idea about what that is. And if we were just to go on history of what he's done, and somebody made a couple of good points. My good friend Marcellus Wiley, who's a former NFL player, who's also on Fox. We agree, but we also disagree on a couple of issues. But on his Instagram, somebody made a comment and said, you can't trust anybody who did business necessarily with R. Kelly. And the only reason that that's significant is only because, you know, whether you're an athlete or entertainer, the circles are so small that you know everyone's character and you typically know what someone's about. And so when it comes to capitalism, to me, you know, and we all want to make money, but I think somewhere down the line, I think you have to be aware that all money is not necessarily good money, and that the message that it sends feels like you're compromised when you don't have a message behind it. Mm-hmm. And I think whether it be Kenny Stills or whether it be Eric Reed and them speaking out, I don't necessarily think that you should be calling him a sellout and vocalizing it in that way. But to question what he's done, I mean, his reputation has been that the Barclays Center in which he was, you know, given 0.00001 of a half, not even half of a percent in an ownership. To me, that conveys that the ownership didn't give you anything extremely significant as it related to that, given who you are, and that they utilize you as a puppet to go to the community, voice into the community that certain changes were going to happen as it relates to affordable housing and these other things that were going to transpire. And they never happened. And so gentrification was happening anyway. Stephen A. Smith made a comment about all the things that he did to help the Barclays Center. Jay-Z didn't do anything as related to help the Barclays Center. Gentrification was coming regardless to Brooklyn, given its proximity to Manhattan. It was coming regardless. It had already transpired before the Barclays Center was already built. So Jay-Z's influence, while duly noted because he was from Brooklyn, he didn't make the change, or it wasn't him that caused that. However, he did make promises that he never kept as related to people who could no longer, or who didn't have the platform to speak for themselves.
So those are some heavy words from a client talking about Jay-Z. And, when I was talking to Melissa before the show started, Jay-Z is very, there's a gentleman named Sean King. Sean King, right? He's known for Black Lives Matter. He has a very good podcast and show. And he talked about how there are certain black people that are considered untouchables. They're considered so high in blackness that reach the highest heights of blackness that they seem untouchable. Those are the Obamas, Oprah, and Beyonce and Jay-Z. It seems that they have done no wrong because they've done a lot of great work. They've done a lot of positive work, helping their own communities out, and even helping people outside of their own communities. Like just really inspiring figures. And it seems that they can do no wrong. But like Sean King, he was, like many others, he expressed a great deal of disappointment that Jay-Z decided to cross the other side. And he did not like the line that that they were past kneeling, because he was like, we're not past anything. Jemele Hill has expressed discontent, Roland Martin and the likes. And I'm a big Jay-Z fan. Love Jay-Z, love big Jay-Z fan for years. And I trust him. I feel like he's earned his stripes in order to do something with the NFL, because he's been doing great work within the African-American community. But I'm also glad that there is uproar. I'm also glad that people are upset and letting their voices be heard. Because if Jay-Z had any notion that he was just going to do a Super Bowl halftime show and let that slide, that's not going to happen with the community being quiet. And I think it also shows that black folks are not a monolith. We differ. Like, yeah, we praise you if you do right, but if you do something wrong, we will let you know.
That is very true. Very true.
Yeah, so we'll see what happens. I hope that a whole season doesn't go by and it's just a halftime show with the NFL. I hope that he makes significant changes. I hope that, there's a rally of some sort. There's, the owners encouraging voting, making it easy for the African-American community to go out and vote, do something in which you can empower that demographic, because 80% of your league is black. What I mean? They're making money for you. They're making things very valuable for you. And you're paying them handsomely. True, true, true. But you should take care of them like they take care of you.
Very true. And sort of to piggyback on that, I mean, from what we've seen of what Jay-Z has done with respect to social justice reform, it's all arguably been entertainment-based. It's been documentaries. It's been, you know, providing celebrities with attorney's fees and things like that. So I would like to see it differ from that sort of trajectory that he's been on. While those are great and those sort of bring our issues to the forefront of society, I don't think that's enough. I think there needs to be political change, which I would love to see him do.
Absolutely.
But again, if it's just a documentary or, you know, some signs at a Super Bowl halftime show, yeah, you know, that, you know,
that ain't it.
No, that ain't it, boss.
That ain't it. That ain't it. Exactly. All right, so I think that wraps up the show. Jay-Z, I hope you can make something happen. Good luck. I hope the NFL realizes that this is an opportunity for them to make significant change. I hope that those who oppose this deal really continue to push and oppose and really hold these people accountable, because if you say that you're going to make change and this is the right step, make sure you do so.
Exactly.
Melissa, thank you for joining me for this first episode.
Thank
this is
you going for
to be
having
a wonderful
me.
Journey.
Yes, I'm excited. I'm super excited to be a co-host with this. We've got some great topics in the works.
Exactly.
I love being able to, you know, speak to the audience about our world and how that kind of fits into regular life. So it's cool. I'm
awesome.
Excited.
All right. Thanks, guys. Thanks for the show. And we'll see you next month. All right. Bye.
Bye.